Hello, 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 and welcome to Stigma Busters. My name is Courtney Rice, and I'll be your host for this podcast. But before we hear from our guests, let me tell you a little bit about me. I am the current manager of marketing and communications with NAMI Wood County. NAMI stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness. And as part of my position, I'm also contracted to do marketing efforts for the Wood County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board, aka ADAMUS. I am also a proud graduate of Bowling Green State University and University of Toledo with my BA in psychology, and I also have my master's in social work. I'm also a licensed social worker and a huge mental health advocate. But enough about me. I want to talk to you today about why we decided to do this podcast and what its goals are. We wanted to create this podcast as a way to continue spreading awareness on mental health and addiction issues. In case you didn't know, 1 in 5 individuals in the U.S. come face-to-face with a mental health condition each year, and that includes the folks right here in Wood County. So on this show, we want to talk to local therapists, social workers, counselors, and others to learn more about not only how you can get help in Wood County, but also we want to bust some stigma. So in case you don't know what stigma means, I'll tell you according to the Google machine. Stigma is the disapproval of or discrimination against a person based on perceivable social characteristics that serve to distinguish them from other members of society. But unfortunately, this happens way too often with mental health and addiction. How many times have you ever heard that people are, quote, crazy or, quote, psychotic? How about people with mental illness are violent? Watch out for those people. They belong in the loony house. That talk stops here. We are going to bust stigma because, after all, we are the stigma busters. Kind of like the Ghostbusters. I ain't afraid of no stigma. With all our talks and interviews, we are hoping to continue to spread awareness on mental illness, addiction disorders, and most importantly, we want to help you get the help that you need.
Today, I'll be talking with Jeannie Lisk, a crisis therapeutics specialist at Unison Health. Jeannie is part of their crisis team in Wood County and is also a licensed social worker. I'm excited to have Jeannie on today and learn more about these great services and important resources available in our community. Today's episode is brought to you by Unison Health. Their mission is to create hope through superior integrated community healthcare. Unison Health has a comprehensive care plan for those they help and can include assistance with behavioral health, substance use disorders, overall primary care. Additionally, they can offer treatment through their subacute detox unit and the Center for Treatment of Anxiety located in Perrysburg. For more information on Unison Health, you can visit their website, www.unisonhealth.org.
Before we dive in more into our podcast, we want to share a disclaimer for our audience. The content we share on Stigma Busters can bring up a variety of feelings and thoughts, and the Wood County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board is here to help you. If you want to connect with mental health and/or addiction resources and treatment, you can dial 211 and you will be connected to services today. Sometimes folks may have thoughts of suicide or hurting ourselves or others. If you are experiencing these type of thoughts, please dial the Wood County Crisis Line. That number is 419-502-HOPE. So again, 419-502-4673. And you'll be connected to an experienced counselor right here in Wood County who will help you get help. You can also text 4-HOPE, so the number 4-HOPE, to the crisis text line. And that number is 741-741. And you'll be connected to a counselor within minutes. Always remember, help is here.
Jeannie, welcome, and thanks for coming in today.
Hi, Courtney. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you go ahead, get us started, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I am a licensed social worker. I work with severe and persistent mental illness. I've done that my entire career. with a brief stint in detox for alcohol and drugs. I wanted to upgrade my knowledge base, found my niche in crisis. I'm really good at connecting with people, and I have the ability, I've been told from clients, that I have a really good ability to put people at ease. So when someone's in crisis, that's a great thing to have. Get someone to connect and talk to you pretty quickly is kind of needed. So I love this, and I've been doing it for about 3 years. So I feel blessed to be in this line.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it sounds like you really found your calling in crisis, if that makes any sense.
100%. I've actually been, the vice president of the company will come by and check with us every once in a while. And she's like, hey, Jeannie, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm doing great. I love my job. And she goes, can you just follow me around and just tell people that so that, you know, they know that this is a good place to work. I'm like, everyone knows that, Amanda.
That is wonderful. Yeah. Cause so often I feel like when, you know, we talk with social workers or counselors, burnout and just, you know, compassion fatigue is such a real thing, you know, especially can imagine working in crisis services too.
And it is. There have been times where I've had to be like, I need to cut back on my on-call shifts. I'm going to take a vacation. I use all of my vacation time, and we have a very good amount of vacation time. I have 4 weeks. So I use all 4 weeks because they just need a break. And I make sure that when I'm on break, I disconnect from work. I go somewhere, even if it's my backyard.
That's great. Yeah, I'm sure that really helps with, you know, you're able to come back and you're recharged and fueled up and ready to go after taking, yeah, that 4 weeks off.
So that not all at once, but yes.
Right. Yeah. Space it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it sounds like, I mean, other than crisis, you have a lot of experience in the mental health field. So if you can think back, what had made you originally want to get involved in the mental health field?
Well, I think for me, it was my personal experience. My dad and my sister both had severe depression. So I got exposed to it early, as well as we're talking about, the stigma that comes with that. My dad didn't want to talk about it with anyone. It was stuff that you kept inside your family. And I could see how that wasn't really working for him. Like, not being able to discuss what was going on in his life with his support system really crippled his ability to heal. So when I was exposed to that at a young age, it really made me want to help people be able to do that in their everyday life.
Yeah, I've talked to some other folks too who shared similar to why they wanted to get into this field. A lot of, you know, working with people, or, you know, they had that their own experience with that. And I think that's so important to have that piece of empathy when you're going into this field.
Absolutely. But, you know, on the other, as much as empathy is a good thing to start with anybody, I'm also very much a people person. I want to connect with people on so many different levels. I just enjoy conversations, and I'm a good ear. That's we have that conversation in groups all the time about sometimes you don't need people to problem solve. You just need people to listen to you. And I've always been a really good empathetic listener. So it just was perfect. It was a perfect career choice for me that I didn't realize was perfect until I got into it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Definitely having that listening ear. I feel like a lot of folks, they have a really hard time with those active listening skills and just, you know, not wanting to interject, give your own advice, you know, so that's definitely key. So getting into a little bit more in your role, what is included maybe in a day-to-day with crisis services and in your position as a crisis therapeutic specialist?
Well, crisis is either really busy or really boring. It's one or the other. There's no halfway, because when you're in a crisis, you've got adrenaline running. You're trying to make sure you're doing what's best for the client as well as the other people who are involved. So it can be very intense for about an hour to two. And then you have paperwork. So if there's no crisis that day, you're doing a lot of catch up, follow up with people, see if there's anything like that, that are any concerns that need to be addressed. You're following up with the stakeholders in the community to see if there is some way that you can improve communication. We talk with all of the community mental health agencies in Wood County to make sure that they know if we pre-screened one of their clients, we're verifying if they need any information from us. So, I mean, it's a lot of paperwork unless you're dealing with somebody who's in a crisis. And then it's a lot of trying to get to what's happening with them in that moment, what's changed in their lives, what are added stresses, and making sure that we're not overstepping and taking away their rights, because we really, really want to make sure that they're able to function in the community. But sometimes that is not the best choice. They're not safe. And so that we end up sending them to the hospital. We try, of course, to make the choice to go to the hospital, the client make it, that they are choosing to go to the hospital, because you're more invested in your recovery if you decide to do it. If you're being forced to do anything, nobody wants to do that.
No, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I can imagine that could be, you know, challenging at times too, when you know this person would probably really benefit from being able to go to a hospital and get that intensive treatment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they're hesitant, that can definitely be a challenge, I would imagine, right?
And it really is about discussing with them what's best for them. We're looking at, you know, what are the protective factors that you have? What are you willing to do? What are we going to do to make sure that you're staying safe? If you're having suicidal thoughts, how often are you having them? And how intense are they? Do you have a plan? If you don't have a plan, what are things we can do to put in place to make sure that we don't get to that point? I talk about a lot of people when I tell them what my job is. I say I'm a person who's there to tell you how to give space in your decision, and a cheerleader. Those are my roles. Like, you need someone who believes in you, and not a lot of our clients don't have that. They need someone who's like, I know you're doing great. You're doing the best you can. Sometimes you need a little assistance, and that's what we're here for.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, being able to play on what you said, the protective factors. Can you explain a little bit more about what a protective factor is?
Protective factors are, so like a really close family relationship. If you live with someone who is helpful, who is not going to be a hindrance to your mental health, being involved in your community, having limited access to firearms, that's a big one. I'm not anti-gun, but if you're suicidal, they need to go away, because we don't want that access there. As well as, like, is it against your religious beliefs? So these are all protective factors that we take into consideration, as well as things like, is this normal for you? Is this like, is this an increase in symptoms? How does your family or people who are in contact with you pretty regularly, how are they seeing this? Are they aware that the symptoms are happening? Do you have someone that you communicate with? Are you connected with a therapist? Like, there is a bunch.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. It sounds like it can vary too, depending on the person, what's available to them, what they have. I want to go back to too, you know, you had mentioned about how family members, you know, can help them get in touch with services. So in talking with just the general community, how do you know when maybe it's time to call crisis services or even recommend services to someone else?
Well, there is this belief that if you talk to someone about suicide, it's going to make them more likely to commit suicide. And it's not true. It's being alone and isolated and feeling like you can't talk about it that really pushes that forward. So if you feel like someone's in trouble, I would say call immediately. Like, it doesn't mean that anything's going to happen besides getting some support from a crisis line. Like, these are things you can do. Are you worried about this? This is how you could talk to somebody. But getting that verbal support from someone can sometimes be just what you need, or prompting you to talk to the person that you're worried about. If you are the person of concern, calling a crisis line is great, because they're not only there for suicidal thoughts, but they're also there to help you with anxiety or depression, and they'll give you support in all of those areas. So if you're having increased depression, like, I can't get out of bed and I don't know what's wrong with me, having someone talk to you is that can be a life-changing event. Just knowing that someone's out there who cares about you is amazing. So we also, because we're one of the only mobile crisis, I think we're the only one in Ohio, we have access to crisis therapists in our office. Now, they're only during office hours, which kind of sucks. We're working on that. But Monday through Friday, you can come to the Unison office, and there is always a crisis therapist here for you to meet with at any time.
No, that's wonderful. Yeah. And I, you know, never really thought about that for crisis services, that could be available. You know, if you're just struggling, you know, maybe not having those suicidal thoughts, ideation, but, you know, just like, hey, I need to talk to someone. And I can imagine that that's probably went up quite a bit in the past year. Is that the case?
We have gotten busier, unfortunately. But if you think about it, humans are not, they're not solitary creatures. We thrive on having connections. Even if you're an introvert and you tell me you like to be at home, you still have your solid like 4 or 5 people who interact with you that you need. So when you go from being able to have interactions whenever to being told to stay home, don't go anywhere, don't do anything, and don't touch anyone. It's very difficult for people to do that. And it has increased people's depression, anxiety. All of the major symptoms have gone up. So suicidal thoughts have increased. And it's really about making sure that your core group of support, you stay active in.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree with that too. I mean, I would consider myself to be what they call an extroverted introvert. And I mean, I've talked about before, you know, I definitely have struggled a little bit this past year. And I would say I'm one of those who has those core people who I really want to be with. And it's very hard. I like to hug people. And, you know, when you can't have that, you know, touch, like, you know, that touch and physical contact with someone, it's so difficult. But it's great to know that there are services available. You know, if someone just needs to talk, or, you know, they're just really struggling, you know, with these, you know, signs of depression or anxiety. I think that's a great service to have available. So in talking, you know, this is Stigma Busters. We want to talk a little bit about stigma. And you have mentioned a little bit as well, you know, some examples of stigma surrounding mental health or suicide, substance use. Have you seen any other examples that you have worked through to help someone learn a little bit more about why that's stigmatizing, or any examples of stigma that you've really seen?
I was like, you can't go past suicide and stigma. Like, I mean, they're hand in hand. And I hate to say that. But again, I have 2 children. They're 20 and 16. And I had one of my daughter's friend's mother contact me because they're worried that their kiddo was having suicidal thoughts. And I'm like, well, have you talked to them about it? And their response was, no. Like, well, how do you know they're having suicidal thoughts if you're not talking to them about it? And it went back to that, well, I'm afraid if I talk to them about it, that they're going to likely do it. And so it took a lot of prompting and coaching. Like, you have to think of it this way. If you feel isolated and alone and you want to talk about one thing and everybody around you gets uncomfortable and refuses to talk about it, then you start beginning to think again, there's something wrong with me. What we want in any community health setting is to instill hope, and not talking about something that you feel is wrong or makes you ashamed or makes you feel dirty. These are things that are not going to help you instill hope. So I have a lot of people who know what I do who come up and ask me questions. So I get drilled. what is this? Or if I do this, will this cause this? And it's always like, well, you don't know until you try. You have to talk. You should see someone who's, you know, I can't be your therapist. We have a dual relationship. We're friends. But I can give you a list of people who would be fantastic to see. But yeah, people and their thoughts of suicide, the number of times that I've heard it's selfish, people aren't thinking, this is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Like, these are not realities for the person who's thinking about suicide. They're hopeless. And the most important thing you can do is talk to them. Tell them how you feel. Tell them that you're there for them. And don't stop calling them. Don't stop reaching out, because that's what they need.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. I think a lot of people think just that myth of if I talk about suicide, I'm going to put it in their head and they're more likely to do it. And, you know, a lot of what I help to educate in different trainings that I do as well is that, you know, if you're going to say something like that to someone, you know, are you feeling suicidal? Or are you having thoughts of killing yourself? They're probably already thinking that if they are suicidal and they answer yes. And it's almost like that sigh of relief. Yeah. You know, to be able to just be like, yes, I have been feeling this way. You know, thank you for recognizing and helping me. Mm-hmm. I've found people are more appreciative of that.
Yeah. And, or they haven't realized that they're having those thoughts like, I just want to go to sleep and never wake up. Those are suicidal thoughts. You're not actively seeking you're not actively planning something. You don't really have an intent, but you're having a thought that you don't want to exist anymore. And that doesn't go away. Like, you have to talk about it. You have to figure out and get the help that you need.
Absolutely. So, you know, we just talked about this too, you know, when you're in the community and you want to help someone mm-hmm. who may be in a crisis situation, who's having those suicidal thoughts, what is something that someone could do who maybe isn't clinically trained, who maybe isn't, has that background of being a licensed social worker? What could they do to help a family member or a friend?
So we have a Wood County crisis line. It's 419-502-4673. That's 419-502-4673. It's the last numbers, they're HOPE. So 502 HOPE. I would put that in your cell phone. Even if you're not having suicidal thoughts, have it in your cell phone. Just have it under crisis line because that gives you access to it. You don't have to look it up. Anytime that I have ever had a client who's ever told me that they're having suicidal thoughts, if they're having these thoughts of not existing, I require them to have this in their phone because it gives you easy access. And it has master level social workers and counselors. They are not local, so you're not going to reach, you know, Aunt Cindy, who you don't really want to know that you're having suicidal thoughts, but they are master level and they are there to help you. So they're going to go over ways that you can, different coping skills. They're going to help if you're having really bad, like if you are actively planning suicide, they're going to prompt you to go to the ER, which is also something that you can do. You immediately can go to the ER if you're having suicidal plans. You're having a mental health emergency, you go to the ER, they're going to call me because Wood County's ER calls us to come and assess you. You can call 911, please come. They also call me and I'm coming out to see you at your house, okay? Now, we would much rather get you the services that you need immediately. When you are utilizing the ER, we show up. When you utilize the police, we show up. We're going to show up regardless. It sometimes takes us a little while to get there, but we get there. So yeah, if you are not the person of concern, I still would put that crisis line in your notes, put it in your phone, have it available. If you are the person of concern, I would work on meeting with a therapist. I am a therapist, so I'm an advocate of everyone having a therapist, even if you only see them once a month. So you have that therapist so you can work on a safety plan. And a safety plan is, what are your triggers? When do you know that you need to seek more help? What are coping skills that you can utilize? And you have that in an easy, accessible way. I'm a big fan of note cards for my younger kids, notes in their phone, like what works for you? I'm going to meet you where you are. Yep, that's about it.
No, that is great advice. I think that's some wonderful, helpful tips. You know, keeping it in your cell phone, that crisis number, having those resources ready and available, and having your own plan in place if you are having any of those thoughts. So, that's everything that I have today, Jeannie. I didn't know if you had anything else you wanted to share with us, give you the opportunity to do so.
I'm like, I don't know. Honestly, I want everyone to know that hope is something you can access very easily. It just is the hardest first step is actually asking for the help. But there are people there who are willing to help you, and all you have to do is ask.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on today, Jeannie. Really appreciate being able to talk to you more.
Thank you. I'd love to. Anytime you want me on, I'll come back.
Great. I'll hold you to that.
Okay.
Stigma Busters is written and hosted by Courtney Rice and recorded and produced by Kaylee Molman. Music is composed by Ben Damon. Stigma Busters is funded by the Wood County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board.
Stigma Busters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Pocket Cast. Subscribe today.